We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Hello friends and welcome to your Friday edition of the Kings of Anger Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. I hope you've had a good week, friends. We are here to build up to the visit to the mighty Rangers of Queen's Park tomorrow. Mark Heath with the young guns, one young gun, one middle-aged hairy individual. AJ, you definitely still retain the youngest title, although yep. Technically you'll never be younger than you are today.
No.
Are you?
I'm good. Yeah. I was interested in that. The last thing you said before we recorded is let's not let it spill over the good atmosphere around it.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what we should do. Let the good vibes spill over into the pod.
No. Because there was a danger. You want it to be boring. There was a danger it could boil over, is what I'm saying. It was very jovial. Very jovial pre-pod because I'm on my third coffee. And that's where it gets dangerous. Because it can spill over. We can go across the line and get ourselves into trouble. So that's what I was saying.
I have a question. Have you listened to the podcast that we recorded after the defeat at Borough?
Yes, and I particularly
did that cross the line.
Well, I enjoyed the fact that Stu quite rightly said about 10 minutes in, none of this is usable so far. when I thought, yes, Stu, you're bang on there. It's not really, but you still
put
it out. Put it out. You know, there was no quality control on that one. Rossi, you were in charge, and I blame you for that. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very good. And I've just realised, I know Adidas are my boys, and I've just realised behind me I've got an Adidas box, Adidas cap, Adidas shirt. I'm wearing Adidas jumper.
Do you own anything that's not Adidas in the sphere of sports casual?
Yeah, I do. Definitely, yeah. I don't just not wear brands either. So just Adidas my boys. I just like the logo, the three stripes. Just, yeah, it's just my jam.
Excellent. Well, as I've already mentioned, our boys are Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. Friends, it's been a busy week. There's been lots to talk about. There's lots to speculate about endlessly on this show. And we're going to start with what you'd expect to start with, I guess. And that's the thing that Kieran McKenna was quizzed about at length yesterday during his pre-match presser. The link to Scottish giants, one has to say, Celtic. Now, clearly, we've got used to this now. Any big job that comes up, K-Money, he's going to be linked to it. He was linked to the Rangers job as well just a few weeks ago. He completely rubbished that, said that was nonsense, and then was forced to speak at length yesterday in the presser about as many possible angles as journos could come up with about Celtic. So, AJ, you were there. We're going to listen to a bit of Kieran in a minute. What was it like in the room? Because I know just as the presser got started, you made a joke about, oh, quite a lot of Scottish representatives here this week, because normally it's not that busy in there, is it? I'd imagine yesterday it was pretty busy and there was a Sky Sports mic and everything there.
Yeah, busier than usual. We had Sky, we had The Sun, we had a few others that had come through. Kieran likes a little joke pre and post podcasts that usually don't make the cut and are usually a little bit off the record. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes he'll joke after a big game like the Norwich one, he'll come in and it'll be like pre-Middlesbrough like last time, and all of a sudden it's gone from 8 journalists to 3 of us. And things like that. So he likes that. He likes having a bit of fun with us. And there was a kind of that kind of mood of, well, I wonder what we're going to talk about today. It's proper elephant in the room territory, isn't it? And sometimes, say, the Rangers question was quite interesting, the one that got asked a few weeks ago, where it was quite prominent. He was mentioned quite a lot in relation to the Rangers job. I think it took until about 15 minutes into that press conference, the last one, to actually ask him about the Rangers job. This one was probably, well, most of the beginning and most of the end of it was based around Celtic and different questions to it. So yeah, we'll play some audio. I think we all probably knew what the rough responses would be to it. It was just interesting hearing different variations of it.
Yeah, he played it with the straightest bat, as you'd expect from Kieran. Essentially, if you've been living on the moon or something and you've missed this, McKenna, reportedly among the candidates to take over at Celtic. Obviously, Brendan Rodgers left earlier this week. Martin O'Neill sensationally went back in as interim boss. He has apparently recommended Kieran McKenna get the job. Ali McCoist has also said that he thinks McKenna's the man. And he was, and I don't know if he still is, but he certainly was the betting favourite for the job at points this week. So let's hear from Kieran, and then we can get right in to some speculation about this.
In terms of Celtic, is that just such a special club, and is it just really something you would have to think about?
It's not something I've given any thought to, and where, you know, any part of my concentration is this week, to be honest. I know I've got a really special job here at a special club, a massive football club that I have and have built a great affinity to, and we're in a really important season and a really important stage of the season. We've got a big week coming up, three big games starting on Saturday at QPR. So honestly, anything outside of that hasn't touched my radar this week. My focus has been 100% on the group here, helping the players get ready for the game.
As far as you're aware, has an approach been made?
I've not had any of those conversations or, yeah, anything of the like. My focus, again, has just been purely here.
So I know your focus is purely here for now. If we were to kind of...
Enough for now.
Well, in the future, what does Celtic mean to you? Is that a club that potentially that you would like to manage one day? Does that club have a special place in your heart?
My focus is honestly just on Ipswich. Of course, you know, we all grow up. As football supporters, I think people who are lucky enough to work in the game and have different affinity with different clubs. But, you know, as I said, I'm really privileged to be in the position that I am. I know the size, the significance, the history of this football club as well. And I think when you're, you know, in the honoured position to manage this football club, I think there's no time or no space to think or discuss, you know, any other football clubs, to be honest, other than doing your very, very best in the role that you're in.
I don't know if you said a minute ago, not just for now. Does that mean when you're talking about Ipswich, do you see yourself being here for kind of many years to come?
I work here as if I'm going to be here forever, to be honest, and I have done since the first day I was here. We try and do everything for the long-term good of the football club. When I arrived, it was always going to be a long-term project, or you hope that it's going to be a long-term project you're going to be involved in, but for the club it was going to be a long-term project. We're still very much in the middle of that. You look outside, you can see a lot of cranes and work going on out there, and this probably represents every part of the football club. So I work as if, you know, I'm always going to be Ipswich manager. I know in reality I won't be. There'll be at some stage in the future that I won't be for whatever reason, but it never detracts from, you know, every day trying to do the right thing for the long term of the club, and that's where my focus is.
Okay, there we go. So that was Kieran. That was what, 2.5 minutes of, I reckon he spent about 10 minutes in total talking about Celtic, or fielding questions about Celtic, framed in various different ways and increasingly desperate ways by journalists, desperately trying to get a line out of him, to the point where at the end, Kieran's kind of like, I don't know where else we can get a line really with this, and kind of chuckling to himself. AJ, we are in the land of the unknowns and the imponderables. Essentially, the only people who know the truth of what's going on with this will be Kieran McKenna, his agent, and those closest to him. What did you make, though, of Kieran and how he responded to those questions yesterday?
Yeah, an interesting one, this, because we've gone through this before, haven't we? A lot of times. Hmm. Remember the time when it was just us working through the first one at the end of the promotion season?
The great McKenna saga of 2024.
Oh, God. That was a fun time. The difference, of course, being that was over the summer. So we weren't able to go in before match X and say, hey, Kieran, you've been linked to this job. You've been linked to this job. What's the situation? So it was always going to be interesting to see how he plays it. Just a quick one in terms of the odds, by the way, he is still the favourite. It's not odds on anymore. So Sky, I've got him at 3-1. Bet365 at 11-4, and William Hill also at 11-4. So still the most likely candidate with the bookies, but not as likely now. In terms of how he played, I mean, it was exactly how we expected it, to be fair. And I think that as he did know that he had to kind of throw something into it, because when you have journalists from national newspapers, you have to give them something. So I think the one that I've seen used the most, the line I've seen used the most was, you know, Celtic are a big club, which was something that he admitted. I think it's well known that he has links, or at least an affinity rather, to Celtic as well. And probably within that, that makes it harder to say, like he did with the Rangers vacancy, no, it's not for me. It's not something I'd look at. Because regardless of whether he would like that job or what, I'm sure at some point in his career, be that, and he did say as well, it should be said during this, I'm not going to be Ipswich manager forever. For one reason or another, I won't be here until like the end of time. And I'm sure that he doesn't necessarily want to take himself totally out of the frame at a club that he has that affinity to. So that also then becomes harder in terms of what you will say and what you don't say, because senior Celtic figures would have probably listened to that that press conference. So I think he handled it about as well as he could have done. I know that there'll be some supporters that will look at it and say, well, he hasn't ruled himself out, and that's a concern. And I think that it probably is in a way. But also there's only so much that you can go and do. And you would have given the same response if we'd asked him about Manchester United a year and a half ago, or Brighton a year and a half ago, and Chelsea a year and a half ago. So in terms of the actual press conference, it was what I expected, and I think it was probably the right thing to do. I guess that the links are a different story, because it's a very different world, isn't it, to being linked to these top Premier League clubs. They've got a different appeal going to Celtic in terms of the job that it is, in terms of silverware and the expectations, but also the league and things like that, that kind of make things a little bit more interesting in that sense.
Well, I'm going to come back to you in a minute, AJ, and we're going to talk about the kind of for and against arguments for McKenna potentially taking the job. Again, I stress, friends, this is speculation. I guess to a large extent, that's what we do, as Big Ange would say, who, of course, was originally the favourite, now has drifted. Rossi, you're the man with the fans. I had a lot of people messaging me yesterday wanting to know if McKenna was definitely going to be at the presser, and then saying various kind of post-presser things about how he didn't say no. He wasn't interested, that kind of stuff. What's your take on it, and what's the kind of feeling you're getting from the fans?
My quick take is, I don't know, I feel he's still got unfinished business with Ipswich Town. I think he's still got this project here. He signed, you know, a lot of players in the summer, and I feel like he wants to get this, you know, football club back to the Premier League. So I don't think it's going to happen. But there's a lot of fans out there who think they're more worried about this link, because of, you know, Celtic, and they are a big club, as Paul Lambert used to say. And yeah, there's potential of, you know, managing in Europe again. I think that's what Celtic fans as well especially want. They want to be better in Europe, and they think they'll probably look at McKenna and go, okay, they'll win us the league, easy, you know, they'll win the Scottish League, but they want to compete in Europe again. So I think fans are on sort of this 50-50 split in a way. I think there's some that are going, yeah, whatever, Celtic, Scottish football, whatever. But there's some that are thinking, oh, you know what? That could be a bit of a worry, because they are a club that McKenna may look at, and maybe a stepping stone for him to potentially go, if he does well for them in Europe, now a Premier League club may snap him up. So, yeah, some fans are worried, but some fans are like, nah, he's here to stay and he's got this project, and let's move on to the next game.
Well, we're not going to do that, Ross. We're going to speculate a bit more about that, first of all. AJ, there are definitely arguments for McKenna being interested in the job, obviously. Celtic, regardless of what you think of the Scottish Premier League, are a huge football club. And we know how ambitious he is. If he were to go there, he'd be expected to win the league every year. He'd be expected to win cups. He'd be expected to not only play in Europe, but compete in Europe. In terms of looking at the reasons why he might go compared to the situations he's in now, what would you say are the main kind of draws?
It's important not to ignore his affinity with the job. I mean, that's going to be the obvious one, the one that I've spoken about before, the fact that there is a connection there, and he's liked Celtic growing up. There's a lot mentioned about the league, but ultimately it's a good way to win silverware, isn't it? You go in there and you know that you're probably not going to finish below third. Yes, third in the Scottish Premiership with Celtic would probably be a sacking offence, but it's a league that's weighted towards you being successful, because you've got two top teams and the rest, basically. As Ross has said, huge club, 60,000 seater stadium that gets sold out week in, week out. I remember writing in a bit I did earlier this week that they played in the UEFA Cup final. They took about, I can't remember, it was thousands of fans to Seville. It's like the most that has ever been seen was 80,000 they brought to that, a huge number. They've got a huge array of silverware. I've done a stadium tour at Celtic. I've seen all of the incredible stadium stuff that they've got in there. 42 Scottish Cups, 22 Scottish League Cups. They won the European Cup, yes, a long old time ago, but still they compete in Europe every single season, in the Europa League this season. There's a lot to it. And as well, you have to think about what comes next. You always have to plan your next move very carefully. And Kieran McKenna's in a position now where his stock has probably changed after the relegation, after the last Premier League season. If, let's say, Amorim or Thomas Frank were sacked by United or Tottenham, would he be in the top conversation for any of those jobs at the moment? Probably not. So there's two ways of going about it. You could maybe have a situation where you go after a Brentford job, like the one that became available, or a Brighton or something like that. But then you can also look at what happened to Ange Postecoglou. Yeah, okay, it didn't work out in the end at Spurs, but he got the Spurs job off going to Celtic, getting them performing in Europe and winning league titles. And then all of a sudden, through doing that, he becomes a manager of a top six Premier League club who went on to win the Europa League. So there is that kind of pathway there as well. Biggest thing is that it's a big football club and you will have the opportunity to challenge for success, for league titles, for cups, for going deep into Europe. It's the kind of things that you won't get at Ipswich. You're not going to compete to win the Premier League. You're not going to compete to be in the Champions League or in the Europa League or something like that, or win the League Cups. And I know it's different with the fact it's Scotland, but it's still a trophy.
Yeah. Okay, now let's look at the arguments against then. AJ, clearly he's under contract to 2028. There would be a hefty compensation to be paid if indeed it was to come to pass. And from what I led to believe, the Celtic owner, Dermot Desmond, wouldn't be averse to paying that. I think from what I've been told anyway, it would be McKenna's yearly wage that would be potentially an issue. I think Rogers was apparently on $3 million a year. And if we're led to believe what's reported, McKenna is on more than that at Ipswich. So when you look at the reasons against, what would you say those are, AJ?
Yeah, that's obviously one of them. So the reported kind of buyout clause in Kieran McKenna's contract is kind of said to be just over £5 million, which is a lot of money for a Scottish Premiership club. As good as an opportunity as it is, you then have to look at the league, and I don't want to kind of talk down on it because there's a lot of good things about the Scottish Premiership, but there is also a reality that some of the teams in that division probably would struggle to stay up in League One, I'll be honest. So in the same way as we spoke about Sam Morsy going away, does that scratch your competitive itch in the same way? Yes, you get to go play in Europe and compete for the title and play Rangers 19 times a season, but do you still get the opportunity to go week in, week out like you have in the Championship? But that's Kieran McKenna yesterday about how difficult the Championship is this season, and he said it is the most competitive league he thinks in world football, arguably, with the level it's at the moment. You won't get that in Scotland, so that's a key point. And yeah, you're competing against one team at the top realistically in Rangers. Yes, this season might be different with the way that Hearts are playing, but all in all, it's quite often a two-horse race, so the same thing. Celtic aren't probably in the best state at the moment with where they are. Look, there's a lot in that squad, a lot of fun Japanese players and talented European attackers, and Kieran Tierney, who's been at Arsenal, players like that, good players. But compared to previous kind of iterations of Celtic teams, it's not as good. There's a really good line from Brendan Rodgers talking about how the kind of the state of the squad has changed over the summer. He said, there's no way you'll go into a race and be given the keys to a Honda Civic and say, I want to drive it like a Ferrari. It's just not going to happen. Thought that was good. Rodgers fell out with Dermot Desmond, a big fallout, and that's got to be a concern, that what went on behind the scenes there. The statement that got put out by Desmond
that was
earlier
strong,
this week
wasn't
was
it?
Scathing.
Yeah.
Basically just calling Brendan Rodgers a massive liar and not a good person to be in charge of a football club. Is that the kind of environment that as a young manager you want to be involved in? In the same way that is the Celtic environment the kind of environment you want to be involved in as a young manager? Russell Martin's quite a young manager, isn't he? And he went up to Rangers. Didn't quite work out for him, and he was getting police escorts out of stadiums because that is the nature of Scottish football fans in the old firm teams. So that's where the expectations lie, and Kieran McKenna would not be afforded any time at Celtic at all.
That's oh no,
the reality of it. Mm. Where at Ipswich is one of the most settled jobs you can get. They're not going to sack him unless they got relegated to out to League One. I don't think they're going to get sacked. He's built up a settled life here. His wife's here. His kids are here. He talks about the training ground going on around him. He's had an impact and an input onto what those plans are for the training ground. So much of his life has been put into this club. Do you leave it for an opportunity that isn't 100% perfect because of all those reasons that I mentioned? Yeah, not sure.
Rossi, would you like to be handed the keys to a Honda Civic?
Yeah, I'll get one of my drivers to drive it, of course. So,
yeah, of course you would, yeah. You would drive it yourself.
Liam from Crewe, if you're listening.
Get behind the wheel of this Civic and drive me around.
Yeah.
Rossi, I'm going to ask you now for your gut feeling. As I say, none of us actually know. There'll be a vanishingly small number of people who actually know what's going on. And even if, you know, there's been an interest, actual genuine interest from Celtic in Kieran. But if I had to ask you now whether you think he goes or stays, what would you say?
I know there's some people think, oh, he hasn't ruled himself out. He hasn't said no. But I just don't think it's the right time for him to leave the football club. Maybe if it came in the summer and he may have gone, you know what, I've just been relegated from the Premier League. You know, this is a fresh opportunity for me, then fair enough. But I think he's got, as I said earlier, unfinished business with his football club. And I think he wants to be managing in England. Maybe Scotland is something in the future, potentially. Maybe something they can look at when he's done some great stuff here. But my gut feeling, yeah, I think he'll be here for a long time, definitely in the next few years, getting us back to hopefully the promised land, as they say. And yeah, he's got a lot of stuff to do for this football club. He could be like the next Bobby Robson, be here for 10, 15 years, because he's got such a good relationship with Mark Ashton, the fans. I know there's been a few little moments, as you know, especially from the West Brom game, he came out about the atmosphere. But that's, we haven't had many of that, have we? So, yeah, I'm pretty confident saying it right now. Kieran McKenna will be our manager, definitely for the next year.
Okay, write that down. Friday, October 31st. Boss Hall says McKenna here forever. I'm going to stick with what I said originally on, I think it was Wednesday the story broke, wasn't it? And I did a little verdict online. I'd say it's unlikely, but not impossible. You know, it certainly worries me more than other ones we've had recently. And I can see the pull. But I still, if I had to put money on it, I'd say that McKenna stays. What about you, AJ?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And I think that'll be the way it plays out with the next kind of few weeks. Annoyingly, or say next few weeks, I don't think this is a saga that gets sorted before the international break at the earliest. I think there's two possibilities. Either something will come up with McKenna or with another manager in the international break, or what I can see happening as well is that O'Neill gets handed the job on an interim basis until the end of the season, especially if they do well in their next few games and they come back through and assess it, because there are managers who have kind of been linked with this job. But it's been said about McKenna, again, it's BBC News, for example, BBC Sport, so to make of it what you will, but things saying he wouldn't be keen to leave midway through a season as much as the job would appeal to him. Or the same with Craig Bellamy, who's in the middle of a World Cup qualifying campaign with Wales. He's been linked. There are managers who don't want to leave at this point. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is one that gets kind of kicked down the line and we might have to revisit it at the end of the season, and that could hinge on where Ipswich are as well. But at least in the short term, I don't think this is going to be one that ends up with Kieran McKenna moving to Glasgow. Personally, I don't think it's going to happen imminently in the next few weeks.
Okay. I do also enjoy the line, obviously the Martin O'Neill link, the line that came out when Kieran was asked about that yesterday. He said the only link to Martin O'Neill is that he used to coach his nephew Rory Fallon. And then I immediately thought of you, Ross. Ex-Blues just going ding, 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 ding. Former town loanee, Rory Fallon, you mean, says Ross. Anyway, so yeah, I enjoyed that. Who knows, friends, ultimately? But it's fun to speculate about, isn't it?
It's not Rory Fallon, by the way. It's not actually him. It's never Rory Fallon.
Oh, is it not?
No, it's not, no.
There's two Rory Fallons.
Yeah, but I don't know if this Rory Fallon actually sort of made it, if you know what I mean. So, okay. Yeah, it's not the former town loanee.
Okay, breaking news. It's not the former town loanee. Thanks for putting me right there, Ross. We will see what happens. Obviously, I did enjoy the sport yesterday of listening to the National Journal. I was desperately trying to wheedle a line out of Kieran. It was definitely entertaining. Friends, other things to talk about from the press conference yesterday. I guess the other main stuff is injury stuff, AJ. We saw Sammy Smodics sharing that he'd gone under the knife during the week for a minor knee injury, I think, and minor surgery. It just brings up to speed on what Kieran said about that, and also Tuber Akpom as well.
Yeah, poor old Sammy Smodics cannot catch a break. I remember talking to him before, and he was saying, I've never suffered a really like major injury issues in my career. Maybe that was the poison chalice for him, because he's had about two or three so far this season. He went and had surgery over the summer. That was on his ankle. You might remember that. That was his first surgery of his professional career, which is mental. And this is the second, and it comes after taking a blow from Chris Meppham in the West Brom game, goes down holding his knee. He tried to play on through that as well, where he goes down having walloped his knee, immediately picks himself up and almost scores a tap in about 40 yards up the pitch, which sums up what Sam Smodics is. But yes, he went under the knife. He's had his operation. Didn't think it was going to be that serious, but look, he's had enough knocks. I'm assuming they don't want to take the risk on it. And naturally, with a knee surgery, that means that he's going to be out for a period of time, a few weeks. Kieran McKenna's hopeful that he'll be back somewhere in that kind of hectic, crazy run of games after the November international break. Maybe in that run of kind of late kickoffs that we get with those three away games or around that period, but he's definitely going to miss the next block of games. What is it? QPR, Watford, Swansea, Wrexham, as a minimum, I think is the expectation, and the international games as well, which will disappoint and frustrate some of an Ireland persuasion. Tuber Akpom, better news. He came off and Kieran McKenna said his kind of leg was in a mess. I think it's around the shin, ankle area. Yeah. I'm labelling it as shin. I don't really know, to be honest. He's been out for a couple of days earlier this week. He missed a couple of training sessions, but all being well, they should be okay with him. He should have a part to play this weekend. Does not look like a serious one. So mixed update. As far as we're aware, everyone else has come out from West Brom okay. So Smodics is a midterm. We've still got Wes Burns as well. He'll be coming back onto grass and training, hopefully within the next couple of weeks and months. And good news on Tuber Akpom.
Was it his cankle? Have you heard of the term cankle? It's an American football term.
Calf
and the ankle.
Okay.
Big
yeah, around that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just around the shin. Basically,
the shankle.
Ooh, it doesn't quite sound as nice, does it? No,
he's got a sore one on the shankle. Rossi, Sammy Smodics, I don't think it's actually a bad thing, because as I said, like Sammy, the way he plays, he's always going to be picking up these little knocks and niggles and stuff, so I don't actually think him actually now having to have an enforced rest is a bad thing, and hopefully he'll come back kind of free of all these little knocks and he can really kick on.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for him because he spoke to AJ in the summer about I've never had an injury, and he's got to, yeah, so maybe it's AJ's fault, maybe, so sorry AJ, but it's also my fault as well. As I mentioned before, I've jinxed him because I put him as my top goal scorer and the man to be the man, and it is a shame. But yeah, maybe this is opportunity now for him just to rest. Okay, and don't rush him back, okay, Kieran McKenna, if you're listening. I know you've been chatting, you know, about you with the Celtic and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, don't rush him back. And Sam, I know Sammy, he wants to be on the pitch, but just don't rush back, especially when you've had setback after setback after setback. Even last season in the Premier League, he came back, didn't he, for the Coventry game in the FA Cup and then came off injured, you know, halfway through. So I know he's had a bit of backlash from Irish fans. He's, of course, gone to social media about that. But this is an opportunity for him now to get some rest, and hopefully he can be part of this, you know, winter breaks. I'm sure he's potentially back for that bit where there's games coming thick and fast. So, yeah, rest up, Sammy.
How old is Sammy Smodics? Is he just tipped over the 30? Has he? He's hit the 30, ooh. Ross. Maybe that's the key. That's what's happening. I also enjoy the idea that Kieran McKenna listens to this podcast and then thinks, I'll just listen to the Kings, just see what they think I should do about Sammy Smodics.
I really hope he doesn't listen to this podcast.
Ross says rest him. That's what I'll do. right, friends. So that's injury stuff. And obviously we'll come back to starting 11 in short order as to how they fill that spot maybe at QPR this weekend and potentially going forward. The other thing I want to talk about, AJ, is something which is, again, got brought up, I think, as part of Casey McAteer's chat yesterday, and I'm assuming, although I didn't listen to the whole of Kieran McKenna because I was doing my typey types, as Rossi said, about Celtic, it got brought up then as well, which is his rank away form. Town's home form, second best in the league, just sweep the Charlton thing under the carpet, pretend that didn't happen. But generally, they've been pretty good at home. Away from home, they've been bad. They've only got 2 points. They're second worst in the league. Only Watford are worse on their travels. And obviously, the game didn't count towards that. They were losing as well at Blackburn. Why do you? I know you asked Casey about this yesterday, and he had thoughts on it. Why do you think that they've been so bad so far away from home? What can you see as kind of the problems?
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because if there was an easy answer to this, I think of all people that would be able to spot it and fix it, it would be Kieran McKenna, and we wouldn't be talking about it because it would be fine. So yeah, it's quite difficult. You could look at the tactics and the setup and the approaches. One of the things that I've mentioned is about kind of respecting teams a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a really, I could see it being quite a controversial point. You don't have to do it in the same way when you're at home, where look, teams are going to come to your place and they are going to soak up pressure. They'll probably sit deep. They'll try and frustrate you. They'll have moments on the counter, but on home soil, on Suffolk soil, as I love to say, and I'm sure Callum, who's listening to this, will love me saying it as well. I know he loves that phrase. It's a different story, isn't it? It's a different setup. Whereas going away from home, I feel like you need to have a different approach. And the game that stands out to me in my mind with that is Middlesbrough, where they went up there and they turned it into a basketball game, and the two centre halves were playing on the halfway line. So it meant that this really strong Borough team were able to just go pass, 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 and they're through. It just take 2-3 moves. And I think that sometimes you need to go in with more respect into these games and realise that the teams you're coming against, like some Premier League teams, can just take 2-3 passes to cut you to ribbons. Mm. And you need to, you know, sometimes you need to have your centre-back sitting deeper, even when you're in possession. And you need to make sure that you've got the right cover in certain areas. You can't always have Jacob Greaves pick up the ball like deep into his own half and just try and dribble past four players. You can't have all these silky smooth Jens Kajusta moves and swing and stuff like that. You also need to do the basics right and go into games respecting opponents. So that's one of the things that stands out to me. To talk a bit about the McAteer point, because I think that was an interesting one where he said quite openly, and we've spoken to players about this before, and I spoke to Dara O'Shea about it, and he said, look, it's true, it's the elephant in the room for us and is the away form at the moment. We do sit down and discuss it. And Casey McAteer brought the point in, I think it's been mentioned by McKenna, that they go into away games expecting to score in the first 30 minutes. And when they don't do that, they grow frustrated and they get annoyed. And that's when the opponent can sense that frustration growing and they can capitalize and the fans can feel it as well. The home fans in these away stadiums, and it builds up and all of a sudden the momentum swings and your confidence has changed. And McAteer was quick to point out football matches aren't 30 minutes long. It's not that if you don't score in the first 30 minutes, you're frustrated and you're annoyed and you know, you've lost the game. Football matches are 90 minutes, 100 minutes, 105 minutes long. And you've got a long old time to swing that. So you can't be getting too invested in the first half hour, which isn't a way that I'd looked at it, actually, until he said it. And it's an interesting point. I think it's all about how you approach these games. I don't think necessarily it's anything tactically, apart from maybe things like keep your centre-backs a bit deeper in the pitch, stuff like that. Mm. Yeah, I think you need to respect teams more and also respect the fact that they are going to try and frustrate you because you're a big team coming down into the Championship. And that's what these sides have been at this level for a long time or been promoted to this level will try and do.
Yeah, that was the other thing that Casey said. And if you want to read the kind of full chat with Casey, that's online now and online this morning. Essentially, he said that teams, when Ipswich Town come to town, they're a big game for anyone coming to their ground, and they're going to be more up for it than maybe they would for other sides. Rossa, you've been sat on the sideline all the away games. Have you noticed anything that you think, that's something that they're struggling with away from home, other than obviously winning, in terms of the way they play away from home?
Not really. I don't know. I think obviously the home form last year was dreadful.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can change, you know, every season is different moments. But then last time in the Championship, it was sort of home and away form was fantastic because we were just getting results here, there and everywhere. So yeah, I don't know. As you said earlier, like if we did know, I'm sure McKenna would be able to fix it and, you know, find that problem. Because yeah, we're obviously sell out away ends all the time. So, you know, in a way, sometimes the best supporters are away from home because, you know, they travelled in their numbers and you've got all the hardcore in that end cheering the boys on. But sometimes it just depends on how other teams set up and they sort of know a little bit about us now. I think we were a bit of an unknown entity when we got promoted in the Championship, you know, last time. I think now a lot of people are like, you know, actually, they know what we want to do. So maybe that's another thing. You know, teams, I wouldn't say we've been found out, but they sort of know McKenna's sort of style of play and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of teams at home, they want to do well. So that's the thing with us. We want to do well at Portman Road. Like many other teams, they want to do well at home as well. So, yeah, there's been some bad away games this season, but there's been okay ones as well. So, yeah, hopefully this trend will stop at some point because we do need to get a win on the board. Because I think if you want to have a successful season, you need to grind out some good away wins. So hopefully it starts this Saturday.
That's the term, though, as well, isn't it? You think back to the last Championship season, the promotion season, AJ, they could grind results out away. You know, I'm thinking of Blackburn. Was it Swansea in the rain? QPR, actually, QPR, earlier in the season. Yeah. You know, they got these 1-0 wins, didn't they? And they haven't shown that ability thus far this season.
No, and again, that comes on to an interesting point. I put this to Kieran yesterday and I said, you know, what are your memories of that last game? Not the last game against QPR, but the last trip to QPR, that 1-0 win. Chapman scores in the 75th minute after shanking his shot and slicing a second one into the net. What are your memories of that? And he said, you know, I can go back and talk about any of these games, but this one actually is quite an important one, is what he said, because I look back at that and I think fans and the external and even internal memories of that season was Ipswich Town win this game 4-3. They score goals for fun. It's pretty football. They carve teams up. It's exciting. And, you know, they're everything you want from these kind of teams. He said it wasn't like that. People have their memories kind of twisted in a way by the fact it ended in promotion. There were a lot of those games. It wasn't week in, week out. There were plenty of times where they did have to go on the road and show these elements to games. And this was a prime example of that, where QPR were managed by Gareth Ainsworth, and we all know what his style of football was. It was a 3-4-3. They were direct. And for a lot of the game, they were the better team. And Ipswich ended up winning that 1-0 by showing grit and determination and having a bit of luck and stuff like that. There you go, Mission Impossible. Sure, you'll find that the QPR, there it is. That's the one. All of those different things. Still available. Go get it. And if you flick through that, don't do it now, but just hypothetical, you will find plenty of, he's going to do it anyway, you'll find plenty of games within that were those kind of gritty 1-0, 2-1 wins. Do you remember going to Blackburn and they had three goals disallowed and
it was Good Friday, penalty. Wasn't it?
It was Good Friday. Yeah. And Sammy, it was an absolutely pivotal, it was a pivotal weekend as well, where the other teams around them had all lost and Ipswich managed to go through and win that game. And there are plenty of other examples that come from that season. They had a pretty tight win at Plymouth. The Blackburn one was mentioned. They won at Swansea narrowly. You can go through and pick a lot. Bristol City was another one. Sometimes you need to be able to show the intangibles, your grit, fight, determination, etc., to go and win these games. It's not always about having the perfect game plan and everything come off and beautiful, brilliant little patterns of play. Just essentially, and this is someone who loves XG, put the ball in the bloody net.
Just win, baby. Win ugly. And you're exactly right. Swansea was 2-1. It wasn't 1-0, as I incorrectly remembered.
But, I remember it as a 1-0 as well.
Yeah, weirdly. Wes Burns celebrating in the rain. All right, then. All that being said, then, they head to QPR this weekend with a chance to get their first away win of the season and put down a marker. I'm going to stick with you on this one. I hope you don't mind, Rossi, but I reckon that AJ might know a little bit more about QPR than you. Although, of course, you have recorded an insight video around QPR, so we'll come to you as well. But, AJ, we talked about QPR earlier in the season as being a bit of a surprise package. I think they've lost two out of the last three now. They lost to Derby last time out. So what are you expecting as we head to QPR? Because clearly, you know, the players and managers say, oh, good team, tough test, etc. What are you expecting?
Yeah, QPR, as Louis van Gaal would say, Queen's Park raisins, one of my favourite Louis van Gaalisms. If you gave me the opportunity to manage any championship team that didn't have parachute payments, QPR would be my pick because they've got so many things that I like, kind of a solid base, good goalkeeper, like strong defenders, players like Jimmy Dunn in there and Steve Cook with his loads of experience, and then Mbenge, who's coming from Reading, who looks really good. A really balanced midfield where they've got Jonathan Varane, a young French midfielder, and he plays next to Nicholas Madsen, and then the attack. And I love QPR's attack. I think it's so good. And we talk about the dribbly boys, and they just have a whole team of them. Like dribbly boys under the age of 24, we've got huge potential. You look at Karamoko Dembele, you look at Ilias Chair, you look at Koki Saito, the Japanese winger, Kwame Poku, who was just so good in League One, Peter, have been injured this season. Richard Kone, who we know all about in his journey, has been incredible. Paul Smith in there, Roman Burrell, who I might come on to in a bit because I think he's the danger man for this game. There's so much exciting attacking talent within this team that I think is brilliant, and I think they can click when players come back in, because it hasn't clicked this season. That's the reality. They started off pretty poorly. They drew a home to Preston on their first game, knocked out of the cup at Plymouth, and then beaten by Watford and absolutely picked apart in a game at Coventry where they weren't actually that bad, but everything Coventry touched turned into a goal. They lost it 7-1. And that was kind of, you're going to like this, Mark. It was then the deer, to be honest.
Yes.
It was the lowest point. And they responded to that by beating Charlton 3-1. And we know that Charlton are a good team. They went to Wrexham and won 3-1. They beat Stoke, who've been excellent. They got draws at Sheffield Wednesday, who are not as bad as people think, and Oxford, which isn't a great result. They went to Ashton Gate, Bristol City. They won there. And then it's been a little bit patchy. Beaten by Millwall. Undeserved, I think, Millwall win personally, given the numbers and the data. They went to Swansea, won that, but then followed it up by, as you mentioned, losing to Derby, who are pretty rubbish. So hit and miss is where they are at the moment. At their best, they can get all these players into the game. They're exciting, they're free-flowing, and they're such a well-built team. At their worst, it's not really clicking, and players still are finding their feet, and they're hit by a few injury concerns and not having some top players in there. It depends which one's going to show up, basically, and that's what makes it hard to predict. But hard balance it's been for the manager to find. Given all of that, to be ninth in the table with 18 points, they've won more games than they've lost, I think is a pretty good start.
Rossi, what have you learned about QPR then from the people on the ground in your insight video, which is going to be out at some point pre-match, probably out today, actually? Because not too long ago, we were talking about QPR being kind of relegation fodder and sliding down the league. So what's the situation there now as Town prepared to go there?
Yeah, shout out to Clive, who I spoke to from Lost for Words.
See what he's done there.
Done very well there, like that. And he said typically it's just it is a typical QPR season. Good moments, bad moments, and just is what it is. He has said the new manager, of course, they've got a Frenchman in charge. I think Azor Matasiwa would have played under him at Rennes.
I believe he signed Matasiwa. Yeah. Manager Julien Stéphan, never managed in England before this, but a bit of a left field pick there as manager.
Yeah, so but apparently he's changed all his principles from that 7-1 defeat, and they go long ball and they play 4-4-2, big man, little man, and all that stuff. Because losing 7-1 is not good. And thankfully, like for QPR fans, as Clive said, he did change that principles because he could have stuck to his guns, went, no, this is my style of play, this is what I'm doing. But no, he went, no, we've got to change that. And they're obviously impressed and done okay since that game. I know they've had ups and downs, but they have got some danger men, I'm sure AJ is going to mention. But yeah, Kone will be a key talking point, because up top, he's the big man in that 11. So yeah, Dar O'Shea and whoever is playing in defence for Town will be coming up against him.
We'll come on to that in a minute. Julien Stéphane, that's quite a fun name to say, isn't it? Just, you sound so bloody cultured. AJ, so let's talk about Danger Men. You've listed a lot of their players, a lot of their attackers. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick one or two out, I know you've been banging on about Kone for months.
Yeah.
So I said Ipswich should
sign him.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as I meant, I love all the kind of the dribbly wingers they've got. I love players like Saito, who I think's good and should have got a, sounds harsh on QPR, but like a bigger move in a way. Mm. And there's a few others in there, but essentially the two that I'll pick out, I'm going to go with the big man, little man combo. I'm going to pick both of them. The two strikers that I think will cause problems. Kone, such an amazing story, came to England to play. He's born in the Ivory Coast, came to England to play in the Homeless World Cup a few years ago. Ended up playing for Athletic Newham, who were in the 10th division. Don't forget, this was about 5-6 years ago. And his goal record at that level, it was like the 10th division of English football, was like, he was scoring 40-plus goals a season. He was absolutely ridiculous. He went on trial to top teams and they couldn't sign him because of his visa issues. He couldn't play professional football. He kept going up the ranks and still scoring ridiculous goals for Athletic Newham until he finally got the chance to move to Wickham after a trial. Did really well there and now is performing in the Championship just like 3 or 4 years on from playing non-league football in the 10th tier, which is crazy. An unbelievable rise for a player who's only 22. And I think he's got a big ceiling, 4 goals in 11 games this season. And the concern that I have as well playing alongside him is Romain Borel. And he was a surprise signing, came in from Burton Albion, where he'd done well, was a good League One player. And he was someone I think could have gone over the summer, but it was a surprise that he went to the Championship. And it's a surprise he's been starting quite regularly. And I think that Julien Stéphane is getting the best out of him, because he's not the tallest, he's about 6 foot, but he's got a real physicality and he's lightning quick. He's so fast. He's the kind that it will just be one ball over the top. He'll time his run perfectly. He's faster than any defender and his finishing has been really good so far this season. 3 goals, 1 assist. He's spread it out quite nicely across the 12 games that he's been involved in. 8 of those have come as starts. And with what I've said about Ipswich and playing that high line and maybe not showing teams, I think, the right respect in certain games, that's where I worry, because all it would take would be a long ball over the top, Kone flicks it on, and you've got Burrell, who's going to be faster than Greaves or Kipray or O'Shea or whoever's going to start in that game. He concerns me, and I think that keeping him quiet will be key to getting something from this game.
I don't know what you're talking about, mate. Town have been rock solid against long balls this season. What about?
And pace Ross, on the counter, exactly. Transitions. And,
absolutely. Yeah. Nothing to worry about here. Rossi, I know you hate this, but I'm going to start with you. Starting 11s then. Who would you play for Town in this game? There's lots of chat around various positions, contentious positions. Who plays next to Dar O'Shea? Who plays in midfield? Who plays on the right wing? Who plays at the 10 in this game? Give me your answers, please, and your thoughts on each.
I'm going to start off front because he's going to be my first goal scorer, Ivan Azon.
Oh, he's going with Azon. Okay.
Yeah, he's going to battle against QPR defence and he's going to score. So he's going to be starting up front for me. I think Hurst needs a bit of time away from the starting 11. I think his confidence is very low. So I'll start Ivan Azon for this one. And defensively, I'm going to keep Kipray in. I think we spoke about this actually on the fan social, so check that out if you haven't already. We discussed about McKenna. Sometimes he has defenders for certain games. We saw that with George Emerson back in the championship season where he played I think he played against Hull, didn't he? Against Liam Delap. He played him instead because he just felt he was the perfect sort of player against them. So I think that's how McKenna will use Grieve and Kipray. But I'm going to definitely Kipray for this one because he's going to be up against, you know, Richard Kone and stuff. And he could battle with him. And then Nunez in a 10 for me. I want to see that again. And I don't want to take AJ's thunder. I'll let him jump on this in a minute. But Jack Taylor again. Give another go.
In midfield? So, yeah. How about the right wing? How about the right wing?
Oh, it's going to be Casey McAteer in it because he did the presser. So I know that's not always way, but I think he will start this game.
All right then, AJ. some positions for you to talk about there. I certainly would stick with Kiprae. I don't think you can drop him after they just kept a clean sheet. And he's been good, you know, the three games he's played, the started, he's been good in two out of three of them. And to be fair, he wasn't the only one that struggled against Middlesbrough. So what were your thoughts on the other positions there? And give us a full kind of 1 to 11.
Yeah, so I'd start with Kiprae. So we'll go from the back. I think Christian Walton will start in goal. Yep. Don't think it's going to be David Button. That would be a plot twist. Furlong against his former team on the right, Leif Davis left, Dario Shea right side of centre back next to, as I agree, Kiprae for this one. I'm fascinated to see what happens with the centre back situation in the next week. Would he start Jacob Greaves or would he start whoever doesn't play today against Watford? I mean, that'll be a discussion for another day, but I'm interested to see that. Matasiwa, of course, keeps his place and it's not going to be popular. And I know Ross has set me up. I don't think Jack Taylor for this one. I think Jens Kjuster to go alongside Matasiwa. It's one of those where, it might not have worked too well in the last few games. And I don't think that Kjuster from his last two starts has been very impressive, but this is the midfield partnership that I think will start most in the championship. So let's just play them. Let's just build the chemistry and build them into the team. Nunez in the 10, I'd love to see a little bit more of. I'm going to go against Ross and go Sindrabala Igeli on the right for this one. And I think Jaden Philogene on the left. And that is possibly a controversial one. Wouldn't be surprised to see Jack Clark, but ultimately, if it's not broke, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it works having Jaden Philogene start games and Jack Clark come on. It's just a formula that works. And then I'm going to go George Hurst up top. At the moment, my inclination would be to play him to try and ride out this poor form rather than take him out of the firing lineup. Maybe it's just one that he needs to play games and have opportunities fall to him and try and build up that confidence that will get him there rather than take him out of the team.
You missed out the 10. Can I assume that's because you're going to put Jack Taylor there?
Did I not say Nunez? I thought
did you
I
say did. Nunez? Sorry. Okay.
Did I say Nunez? Ross is nodding. So yes, Nunez in the 10.
Excellent. Just on the Nunez topic, I'm sure we'll enjoyed the chat with the Norwich owner in midweek, didn't we, on Canary Call?
Where I listened to some of it live.
I don't know. He said, now that I know what an own goal is, it's an own goal. And I'm not sure I'd want my owner to be saying, admitting that he didn't know or doesn't know until recently what an own goal is.
There's a lot of things in that interview that I wouldn't like my owner to come out with, to be perfectly honest. Not really relevant, is it? But it was quite an interesting listen over the course of maybe, I think I tuned into about 15 minutes and I felt sorry for him in some bits and others. I was just like, what are you on about?
Yeah, they're in a bit of bother, aren't they, across the board, I think it's fair to say. All right then, Rossi, it's your time to shine, baby, because you are leading the way. It's predictions time. Have you got that table?
Still is, just actually.
Oh, is he? You're leading the way in terms of the people here.
AJ's
leaving. He's off. He doesn't want to see, the table. And this is why. So Stu's on top 12 points, Rossi second 11 points, me 10 points, AJ all the way down there. You might need a little telescope to see that, all the way at the bottom there, 6 points. Whoa, dear, oh dear, cut adrift. Things are going well thus far for yourself and Stu, Rossi. So tell us what you think's going to happen tomorrow.
I've also got breaking news prediction from Stu.
So have you?
His prediction out of the way, first of all.
Well, he's top, so he should
start. He's gone for a 1-0 Town win. Ooh. Daro Shea to get a goal. He's still picking that choice. He wants that goal from Daro
Shea. He wants
O'Shea,
doesn't he?
Yeah. I know he did score against Borough, but I think he wants an O'Shea winner and clean sheet. So, 1-0 Daro Shea from Stuart Watson. My prediction, I want the first away win to happen this Saturday. I just have that feeling it's going to be a draw. So I'm going to go for that. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I'm going to go for 1-1. And as I mentioned earlier, Ivan Azon to score. Hopefully he starts. Please start. And he will score the first goal. And then QPR will equalise. And then, 1-1. So, but we'll win away at Swansea. That'll be our first away win. That's my. I'm putting that down now. That'll
it's
be
your hot take.
Win.
That's your hot take. Yeah. Okay, so Stu win, Rossi draw. What do I think? I'm leaning towards a draw. I'm going to win. I'll say 2-1 win because you've taken 1-1. That's probably what I was thinking. I'll say 2-1 win, and I will say
who's going to score the first goal? I will say, Gelly. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? See him get his first goal. AJ, you showed signs of anger when I said 2-1.
I wouldn't have with anyone else, but I'm trying to track you down. That's the problem. Yeah. I was going to say 2. Oh, God. I'll go with I'll back 1-0 as well. I'll follow Stuart Watson. I'm going to say, and the hardest part of this, I don't know if you guys had the same thing. Who's starting? Because I know we picked our teams, but like there's at least 2 or 3 contentious decisions, especially in the forward line. We've spoken about striker and left wing and right wing, and I don't even feel comfortable about number 10. And I'm going to back George Hurst to see it out. And it's helped by the fact he's on penalty. So I'm doubling my chance. Probably not doubling, but increasing my chance.
He missed his last penalty, mate.
Yes, I know. But if he steps up and there's a chance, isn't there? There's a chance, God damn
it. So you're saying 1-0. You're saying 1-0 as well. You've just been speaking about free scoring, pacey, rapid QPR.
Yeah. And okay. I think hopefully Ipswich, with a free week on the training ground, will learn their lessons and know how to deal with this. But okay. That is my concern.
All right, then. Know.
Can you see why I'm bottom of this predictions league this season?
Well, hey, your luck's got to turn at some point, mate. So we've got wins from me, AJ, and Stewie. I'm saying 2-1. Stewie and AJ both 1-0. And Rossi saying 1-1. So we'll see what happens. Before we finish, Ross, I just want to talk about a couple of other things which are in your wheelhouse. You're off to Portman Road tonight to cover the under-21s, we've spoken before, a bit of an emerging story at Town, because they're doing incredibly well in their first season in PL2. We've spoken about some of the players to watch. You've written about some of the players to watch, actually. Tudor Mendel, one of my new favourite players, favourite stories. So you're seeing them tonight. And then the ladies have got a big game as well, haven't they, on Sunday against Newcastle United. So do you want to talk a little bit about both of those?
Yeah, playing off the under-21s playing Newcastle as well. So my pitches will just be Newcastle United players plus as Ipswich Town players for the women and the men under-21s. I think there was actually one weekend where I think I had there was 3 games. I think I covered the under-18s, the men and the women, and they're all playing Bournemouth. So I just remember just getting just loads of pictures of Bournemouth and Ipswich for that whole weekend. But yeah, it's going to be a big game. For the women's, I'll start with them quickly. I know that's this Sunday, but they're back for the international break. There's a few players that have had international call-ups, which have been great. Natasha Thomas making more history, scoring her first ever senior goal at international level for Jamaica, which is great. She now adds to a list of record goal scorer, all-time appearance maker, first international senior player, and now first international goal scorer at senior level for Ipswich Town Women, which is great. Grace Neville's been on a travel. She's been in Mexico and in Kansas in America to play against Mexico and USA for New Zealand. So she's been busy, and there's been a few other players playing for England on the 23s and Scotland on the 23s. But Joe Sheehan's side needing to get a good result. They're playing against a Newcastle team that are going to be managed by an interim manager, because they sacked their other manager because they haven't been doing pretty well. They're ninth in the table, and they'll be on the touchline. I don't know if you remember this guy, Peter Ramage. He used to play for Newcastle, defender back in the day. Yeah, he will be the assistant manager to the interim manager, who was the assistant manager to the manager who's been sacked. So it's going to be a big opportunity for Joe Sheehan's side to get a potential good win on the board, because last time out in the league, they lost 4-0 against Birmingham. So they need to bounce back from that. So, big game at Colchester. So if you're free on Sunday, go down and support the girls. Been some good crowd so far, which is good. In their new home in Essex. The under-21s, they're playing Newcastle. They're unbeaten so far. They played on Tuesday in the Premier League Cup. They drew 2-2 with Preston. So they're having a really good season. And it's the first game at Portland Road, because they play at Colchester normally. I think they're in the rules. They have to play a few games at the Portland Road Stadium. So, that's tonight. Looking forward to getting down there, getting my snappy snaps as standard, and seeing the Young Blues in action.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for Rossi's report from the under-21s tonight. You will be there as well on Sunday, Rossi and Tom. I'm assuming you'll be there on Sunday. I haven't checked that, but I'm saying you're going to be. So big game for the ladies. Sounds like a winnable game. Natasha Thomas, though, Rossi, what a legend. in terms of stories, I mean, there are loads of great stories, aren't there, around Ipswich Town? But hers is up there as well, isn't it? I mean, she's been with the club for years, come from local non-league football, is now, you know, all-time leading scorer, scoring for Jamaica. That's almost kind of movie stuff in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible. I think this is her testimonial year. I think she's been in the club nearly 10 years now. And yeah, from grassroots football to playing, you know, in the fourth tier with us in the Women's Football League, and then going up to now playing the Championship, or WSL2, you call it these days, is an incredible story. And now she's full-time as well. She's now a full-time professional footballer. When I first ever met her, you know, she had to like pay to get, you know, different things. And it's an incredible story. And yeah, she's sketched in the Ipswich Town women's history, you know, definitely on the internationals boards. If when she does ever stop playing, she's probably going to be an ambassador at the club forever, because she is just a trailblazer in this, you know, this team, from, you know, the journey she's been on. And yeah, I'm sure she's so proud to score for Jamaica. And luckily it was a win, because you always feel like, great to score for your country, but if it's in a defeat, you're like, oh, it's not great. Because she played against England, didn't she, in June?
Yeah.
And they lost like badly, but still must have been an amazing moment for her to play against England. But yeah, great story. And hopefully she can add some more of her milestones, because I'm sure she's still not finished yet.
What was the name of the stadium? I remember reading your story. What's the name of the stadium? It was the Atto Bolden Stadium. That's right. Atto Bolden. Yeah. If you probably don't remember, boys, but Atto Bolden was one of the best sprinters in the world in the sort of mid to late 90s. And he wore these ridiculous glasses for one of the Olympics, where he had like, they were literally kind of like silver skull things attached over his skull like this. He was around, he was a perennial kind of second or third place. He was never best in the world, but always one of the most entertaining guys to watch. Yeah, fantastic. Right. Anything else to mention, AJ?
I know we're on the golden hour mark, but I know that there's a lot of people that will be worried about Kieran McKenna being the favourite for the Celtic job. Can I tell my story?
Oh, you've got this story to tell.
Alleviate the...
How long is this going to be? Because, I mean, we're at an hour.
Give me 2 minutes and I'll... Okay. I know, we're at an hour. Give me 2 minutes. Yeah. Because you did have a request from Ben Brindle, who I put it to you, and you said, no, it sounds boring.
Yeah, because I was in playful mood. But in for playful Ben, mood, so. For Ben, I like Ben. So let's hear this story.
Okay. So I have a friend called Amulo. I might mention him on this podcast before. And while he was at uni, I believe it was while he was at uni at Loughborough, some of his mates got bored and decided that they would try and get him on the odds list to be the new manager of Notts County Football Club. So they created this personality, this story for him. This is Amulo Benen. He is the young prodigy manager of Swedish fourth division team FC SodaStream. They took this to Bet Victor, who are very gullible, and they said, look, we've heard this insight that Amulo Benen is going to be the new Notts County manager. Just to let you know, you might want to put him on your odds list now. Bet Victor did not do their research. Bet Victor put him onto the odds list, initially quite low. Now, those of you familiar with like managerial market betting, if you put money on someone, their odds rise. So if I went and put like £2,000 on Ange Postecoglou to be the new Celtic boss, he'd probably become the new bookie's favourite. I'm not going to do that. But people put money, his mates put money on him to be the new Notts County manager. And because people weren't betting on the new Notts County manager, who the hell does that? All of a sudden, he was going up the ranks. And people were starting to take notice of the fact that on the list, he was ranked second there.
Yeah.
At 2-1 favourite. There was a point, and I can't find the screenshot, that he was the odds-on favourite to become the new manager of Notts County Football Club, ahead of Luke Tisdale, Neil Collins, Mike Williamson, Gary Johnson, etc., etc. I decided to get in on this a little bit. I created a Photoshop of him as as a manager, which again, like, people actually believed was real. Notts County fans online, who the hell is Amulo Benen?
Yeah,
got in the, this was getting put all over the place. No one could find out anything about.
So look at that picture again.
There he is.
I mean, there's a
photoshopped him onto. I can't remember whose head I photoshopped that onto. That is also from a screenshot of a story that got written by Sport Bible. It got picked up by national newspapers. Yes, my mate who was studying at university became the odds-on favourite with Bet Victor to manage Notts County, despite the fact that he was 19, sat around in his university halls. He didn't get the job, unfortunately, but it goes to show that that these odds don't always mean a lot. Once you're on the list, everything is decided by the amount of money that gets put on you. And all it takes is some drunk uni lads who are having a laugh, calling you the fourth tier manager FC SodaStream in Sweden, for you to suddenly become the odds on favourite for an actual football job ahead of actual football managers who are actually like linked with the job properly. So there you go. Don't buy into these things too much.
Two observations there. The picture has a little bit of the Peter Sutcliffe about it, if you don't mind me saying.
Okay.
Yorkshire Ripper-esque. And also, kids have changed, man. When I was at uni, I was not doing things like that. I was drinking heavily in the student union and experimenting with various other substances. I wasn't trying to make my mate a betting favourite of a football side. Things have changed, is all I can say on that. Friends, there's one big... Well, I couldn't possibly say that, but I might be inclined to agree with you there, Rossi. Anyway, we've heard the story. Friends, the next thing to say, big news, KRA Live 3 is confirmed. Tickets are going to be available from Monday. It's going to be on Saturday, December the 20th at the Baths, or the Baths, as you say around here, in Ipswich. It's going to be a big Christmas party shindig, KRA style, after Sheffield Wednesday game, we've already said. Hopefully, we'll make history with Town actually winning a game on the day of a Carrie Live. Fingers crossed. They'll never have a better opportunity, will they? So December the 20th, Saturday, December 20th, at the Bath. Tickets available from Monday. We'll share the link wide and far on our socials. And we'd love to have you there if you've been to the first two. Hopefully you'll agree they're enjoyable nights. I didn't get anywhere near as drunk at Carrie Live 2 as I did at Carrie Live 1. So that was an improvement. And I intend to continue on that, even though it is Christmas, for Carrier Live 3. So I do a more than competent job hosting. And hopefully, as I say, friends, if you have been to one, you'll be able to recommend it to others who could hopefully get there and join us for a bit of Christmas fun. And who doesn't like fun around Christmas? And obviously, just a reminder, Spend Support, our sponsors, use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off all their excellent alcoholic beverages. Gary and the team there. And our newest sponsor, Molecular UK, use the code KOA10, Molecular-UK, he says, just checking. Molecular-uk.com. Check out there for 10% off all their various cleaning products. I've got myself a little care package, and I'm slowly making the Heathmobile look cleaner than it's ever been. So get involved with them. Also, friends, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Just helps us lift us visibility-wise in the old charts. It's always nice to get those. And follow us across all our social medias, Kings of Anger on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, X. And we three are individually on Blue Sky as well. We're also on Facebook, if any of you granddads out there still use that. Friends, anything else to mention? Rossi?
Nope. Just enjoy the game if you're going as standard. But if not, we'll be there. Follow Cards of Us. Boom.
Absolutely. AJ, any final words?
I bloody love London away days. We need more of them. The fact there's only two in the Championship this season is very sad. And Watford does not count as one, before you come at me.
Okay, it's too late into the show to get too much into that, and we'll explore that another time, perhaps. Friends, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I hope you enjoy your weekend, whatever you're doing. If you're going to the game, enjoy it. If you're not, obviously follow it all with us, and we'll be back next week to talk to you all over again.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.